happy to introduce now our first speaker, and I should say I'm going to make very brief introductions in order to give more space for the talks and discussions themselves. So our first speaker will be Leslie Urrenia. She is a photography historian and curator, and she has done a number of very impressive things before she moved to her current position as assistant curator of photographs at the Smithsonian National Portrait Gallery. Among other things, she was a curatorial assistant at the Department of Photography at the Museum of Modern Art. She's been a professorial lecturer in art history in the George Washington University. And she's gained her PhD from Northwestern University. And I think the talk she's going to give today is also related to this in-depth research she's done for her PhD. And now I'm very happy to open the floor for Leslie.
Thank you so much, Eva Maria, and for the kind introduction. And many thanks to you, Costanza, Anna Sofia, and the Max Planck Institute for inviting me to participate in this conference. And I very much look forward to the conversations and discussions that will unfold over the next 2 days about the compelling and always timely subject of migration. Starting in 1904, the American photographer Lewis Hine joined curious onlookers at the Ellis Island Immigration Station in the New York Harbor, where he photographed newcomers to the United States. Overall, between 1904 and 1926, Hine took at least 74 photographs of migrants transiting through Ellis Island, which during those years processed millions of people. The photographs went on to be used in classrooms, published in journals and books, and eventually entered the collections of libraries, art and history museums. In their different guises, these photographs have been tools in visually distinguishing foreigners from Americans and have both depended on and furthered the period's racial categorizations. Along with Hine's many reform-minded projects, including his photographs of workers in textile mills, New York's Lower East Side, and Pittsburgh, the Ellis Island photographs have given him the reputation as one of the most influential social reform photographers of his time. To an extent, this portrayal is accurate, since for decades, Hine's works have been used to humanize the immigration experience in history books and museums. More recently, contemporary artists, including J.R. and Tomi Arai, have returned to Hine's Ellis Island photographs for installations that bring the past in dialogue with the present, much as we are doing today and tomorrow. However, this is only one side of the story of the circulation and public life of these photographs. In what follows, I will discuss the development and impetus behind Hine's Ellis Island project, and focus on a selection of the photographs' use and reuse during his lifetime and today. This discussion makes clear how Hine's works have served to categorize and often racialize their immigrant subjects. Lewis Hine was born in Oshkosh, Wisconsin in 1874, and after matriculating at the University of Chicago, he moved to New York in 1901, where he became part of a burgeoning community of reformers who, in their urge to uphold and further progressive era values, turned to sociology as a way of studying the populations they aimed to help. He also immersed himself in pedagogical theories that emphasized experiential learning, which was a teaching method at the Ethical Culture School, where he served as instructor of nature studies from 1901 to 1908. Founded in 1878 as the Working Man's School, the Ethical Culture School was an integral part of the Ethical Culture Society, a quasi-religious organization loosely based on the principles of the Jewish faith and led by the social reformer Felix Adler. The society was a, quote, progressive and democratic humanist religion that embraced, quote, the necessity to elevate mankind through moral instruction and social activism. The school was inclusive, with students from varied socioeconomic and religious backgrounds, quote, seated on the same benches, subjected to the same influences. Frank Manny, Hine's supervisor at the Ethical Culture School, later recalled that the Ellis Island Project had emerged from their conversation regarding a pilgrim celebration, which was similar to American Thanksgiving. According to Manny, a Little Russian said he was thankful that pilgrims had landed on Plymouth Rock. Manny and Hine's hope was that the photographs would encourage their students to feel equal regard for Ellis Island and equate new immigrants with the revered pilgrims of 1620. From its inception, therefore, Hines Ellis Island Project dealt with difference, prejudice, and the assumed power of photography to alter developing notions of new immigrants. Within the school's context, the camera and photography had many uses, including recording school activities that would help Hine and his colleagues with their nature, geography, and history lessons. By documenting the experiences of immigrants at Ellis Island, Hine gave his students insights into the implicit racialization of the immigration process, that is, how racial categories were imposed on newcomers at the station before they became part of New York's urban society. For instance, photographs such as the Young Russian Jewess from 1905 may have possibly been shown to the Little Russian of Manny's story. Overall, the photographs Hine took fall into three categories. There are the narrative ones, which captured the immigration process, such as being interviewed by an immigration official, as in this photograph here from 1926, interpreter and recorder interviewing newcomers at Ellis Island. There are the art historically based images in which the traditions of religious imagery are used to sway viewers to adopt a more positive view of immigrants, as in Ellis Island Italian Madonna, also from 1905. And here these pictures are carefully composed and designed to humanize his subjects. Then there are the typological, indebted to anthropology and sociology, which helped identify immigrants as types. In these images, Hine generally focused on single figures in native dress, in poses similar to identification photographs, and sometimes from the front and also from the side, as we have here in Slovak at Ellis Island. Examples of all of these started appearing as illustrations in both pro- and anti-immigrant publications as of 1908. And between 1908 and 1911, several photographs illustrated articles in the progressive era journal, The Charities and the Commons. In 1910, others appeared in the pro-immigrant publication, Our Slavic Fellow Citizens, by Emily Greenbalk. And while 11 of them were included in the nativist text, The Old World and the New, by Edward Ellsworth Ross, published in 1914. Today, I will focus on two of the photographs that overlapped among these sources, and as we will see, provided visual aids meant to assist their readers, many of them social workers, in identifying immigrants according to the period's racial categories, be they Slovak, Italian, or Slav. Social work developed into a profession during the Progressive Era as private institutions and individuals pushed for political, labor, immigration, and housing reform. Social reform, however, did not mean that the period was devoid of prejudice against foreigners, and many, even the empathetic individuals, believed race played a significant role in a newcomer's character, and hence, her or his misfortune. Nativist reformers saw immigration restriction as an inherently progressive cause. If new immigrants were the source of societal ills, then restrictions would, quote, guard the nation from the contamination of Southern and Eastern Europeans, end quote. These strains of thought inevitably affected the use and dissemination of Hine's photographs. This photograph of a young woman with this heavy shawl and a woven blouse with this delicately butterfly pattern appeared on the cover of the June 6, 1908, Charities and the Commons. Originally a weekly journal started by the New York Charity Organization, Charities and the Commons was the period's main reference for social workers and became one of the principal outlets for Hine's photographs starting in 1907. In the issue, there is no direct reference to her country of origin, except for a veiled one through an article by Antonio Mangano entitled The Effect of Emigration Upon Italy. Whether Mangano had this photograph in mind when writing the article is not clear, yet we do learn from the issue that central and southern Italy had been impacted by the many people emigrating in large parts to the United States. Eventually, Hine titled the photograph Italian from Albania, or An Albanian Woman at Ellis Island. If within the context of the Charities and the Commons, her origins remained unclear, by the time she reappeared in the nativist and anti-immigrant book, The Old World and the New, her caption identifies her as an Albanian woman of Greek or Italian ancestry. This is by no means a compliment, given the overall derogatory tone of Ross's text. The book opens with mockery and accuses a distinguished social worker of blindness, since, quote, she had no feeling for the invisible children of our poor, even the unborn ones, end quote. For Ross, it was imperative to protect the American nation and preserve it for future Americans. He sets up the text as a defense of these values by identifying the many ways foreigners would be harmful to the country and detailed this group by group, demonstrating his fear of what he called race suicide, a term he coined in 1901. He concludes with his strongest statements against immigrants in the chapter titled American and Immigrant Blood, where he resorts to offensive descriptions of their physiques. Even after being, quote, washed, combed, and in their Sunday best, newcomers continue to be, quote, hirsute, big-faced persons of obvious low mentality. Any change in their external appearance and attempts at assimilation could not make up for their inherent un-Americanness. Although Ross used the photograph of the young woman in the chapter on Southern Italians, parading them with belittling terminology, he does not mention her in the text, nor refer to the potential heterogeneity of Italians, even if he denotes their origins in the captions. Ross and his editors, however, chose an image that allowed for maximum scrutiny, even if Hines' photograph does not easily support the author's argument for an unruly, violent, and uncontrollable immigrant. The use of the same photograph in both Charities on the Commons, with its usually positive approach to immigrants, and in the context of Ross's publication, highlights how Hines' photographs could visually differentiate sitters, but that they, like the period's definitions of race, also had unstable meanings. Three additional photographs by Hine appeared in the September 5, 1908 issue of Charities on the Commons. The photo study titled, As They Come to Ellis Island, depicts the racialization of newcomers at the station as they begin their transition to the United States. The implication here is that there is something about the newcomers in the photographs that will become different once they leave the station. By depicting them in moments before their supposed transformation, each of the subjects is also reinscribed within a racial group. While the photo study's title emphasizes the photograph's narrative elements, the placement and cropping on the page also underscore the typology of some of the newcomers. The Slavs, for example, is an explicit instance in which, by silhouetting the two women to make them seem as if they are against a blank backdrop, accentuates the shapes of their bodies and renders them prone to scrutiny. There is no fence and no one leering, you know, at them from the back. If I can point at this. Back here, there's someone who disappears entirely when the photograph is in the magazine. The two women stand alongside each other, arm in arm, dressed in elaborate and snug bodices that rise above their waists and reveal loose-fitting cotton shirts cinched by the waistband of their white skirts. They both wear scarves to cover their hair, then a common sight at the station. Their gazes are shifted to the right, as if something captured their attention beyond the frame of the photograph. Like the other images in the photo study, their title is definitive, making these two women stand-ins for all Slavs, and they soon identified an even more defined group when they appeared in Balk's text, Our Slavic Fellow Citizens, which was an in-depth sociological and historical assessment of Slavic migration to the United States. The book, based on a series of articles Balk had written for Charities and the Commons between 1906 and 1907, guides readers through the process of displacement from abroad to arrival in the United States. For Balk, the Slav is not an immutable entity, and for her it is imperative to better know the immigrant by learning about his or her past, villages, history, and culture, which, quote, he is for the most part powerless to transport with him to his new home. As with Charities on the Commons, Balk's publication was written in part for, quote, busy social workers, and was an attempt at a portrait that depended on Hines' photographs to make the immigrant more legible. In defining the Slavic type, Balk explains, yet amid all these complicated variations, there gradually forms in the mind of the observer what is felt to be a type, much as the composite photograph is made up by the merging of many impressions on the sensitive plate. Through a combination of text and image, Balk prompted readers to develop a mental composite that generalized immigrant groups by their common experience at Ellis Island. And I'm going back to this fence that has returned. Now we have a context for where the immigrants were processed more when they were entering the country. And she's also using works that are more narrative in nature and that also categorize them by a race-specific prototype. The latter in particular could help Balk's intended audience of social workers identify immigrants, the targets of their future work, as they settled in the country. As positive as Balk's tone may have been, let us not forget that for each seemingly benevolent newcomer, to others, the same person could also symbolize the potential end of the American nation. When comparing Slavs to Italians, Ross adopted some of the imagery and also the language that Balk had used regarding the Slavs. And in the end, for him, the temper of the Slavic race appears to be something soft and yielding. He feminized the newcomer, a common trend at the turn of the 20th century, when writers such as Ross and others took the fears of the weakening of the American stock. He incited these fears further by writing about the potential intermixing of the so-called native-born Americans with the incoming foreigners. Hines' photograph of the two women reappears in the chapter entitled Slavic Brutality and Reckless Fecundity. To give you a sense of what Ross was talking about, there we go, in which Ross expounds on the fate of Slavic women at the hands of their supposedly brutal yet yielding men. Although only 1/4 of incoming Slavs were women, the chapter is replete with their images, yet nothing in Hines' photograph supports Ross's claims of the potentially violent and alcoholic Slavic man that he writes about. As in Charities in the Commons and Our Fellow Slavic Citizens, the photographs provide a general depiction of the immigrant and racial type, allowing Ross's readers to formulate an image of what they might look like, should they ever encounter one in person. Hein himself participated in a similar enterprise, though not racist like Edward Ross's, by compiling a portfolio at the behest of the Russell Sage Foundation in the late 1930s. And here I'm showing you a selection of the beginning of his portfolio that Hein put together for the Russell Sage Foundation, which is still active today in doing social research. And the point of the portfolio was to bring together almost 400 photographs by Hein that actually gave you a sense of the work conditions, starting with immigration, so it's tracing the immigrant really from arrival at Ellis Island all the way through housing and labor in the United States. And it's a portfolio that he ended up not completing, but there are about 400 photographs, and there, these gray boards are 8x10 gray boards that are then, they have 5x7 pictures on them, and then labels that were edited laboriously throughout the process. And Hein kept on going to the Russell Sage Foundation over and over again in editing them, and it seems that he was a bit of a pest about the whole thing, but it's really something that he himself puts the Ellis Island photographs at the beginning of his own sort of career and sees them as really as the beginning of this whole idea of following the, quote, racial stocks, as he later says, in labor and sort of seeing them as the beginning of the rest of his work. And also by the 1930s, Hein's photographs had caught the attention of the critic Elizabeth McCausland, who organized a retrospective of his work at the Riverside Museum in 1939. And this, I see, has helped cement Hein's reputation as a photographer of social reform. And she also focused on the sentimentality of his works. And this is something that keeps on coming back in the historiography about Hein, that there's this sentimental aspect to it. And although Roy Stryker, the head of the FSA project, had turned him down, Hein continued selling photographs, and in 1940, unsuccessfully applied for a Guggenheim Fellowship. He died in penury, yet his Ellis Island photographs continually reappear in publications, museums, and social media as a reminder of the immigrants of the past. At Ellis Island, for instance, they have appeared as larger-than-life-size reproductions, and more recently in revamped installations that give people a sense of the travails endured by immigrants as they tried to go through the so-called Golden Door. They are the accepted and reused iconography and symbols of an older immigration. Contemporary artists have also repurposed them to remind today's visitors of the continual formation of the American population and its dependence on a constant influx of immigrants. For JR's ongoing installation Unframed, which opened in 2014, The artist used photographs by known and unidentified photographers, and in his typical style made wallpaper that was placed on the walls and what had served as the hospital at Ellis Island. And here we have one of the Hine photographs that he used, which he wallpapered onto these filing cabinets and the office furniture in this hospital. In 2005, Tamir Rai, in collaboration with English as a Second Language students participating in New York's Tenement Museum's Shared Journeys program, also repurposed Hine's photographs to explicitly link the experiences of immigrants past with those of the present. Here, the young Russian Jewess loomed from the window of the Tenement Museum, several feet above the sidewalk, as a reminder to New Yorkers and visitors to the Lower East Side that she too may have lived in these very tenements and been part of the burgeoning metropolis. In all of their guises, the photographs have both generalized and individualized the immigration process, and at least some of Hine's photographs have returned to their original intention, to teach their viewers about earlier immigration, finding affinities between the old and the new. Thank you.